The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. Let's hop into the AAA, fellas, and the first story we have today feels like I repeat myself every week with these gambling things, but we're doing it once again. Gambling investigations at Iowa and Iowa State have resulted in criminal charges filed against seven current and former athletes, including ex-Hawkeyes basketball player Aaron Euless, Cyclone starting quarterback Hunter Deckers, Hawkeyes kicker Aaron Bloom, and former ISU football player and current defensive end for the Denver Broncos, Ayoma Uwazuriki, who we actually covered last week in our episode. So if you want to hear our thoughts on what he got suspended for in the NFL last week, go watch that one. All right, and then you have Euless. He was accused of placing about 1,800 underage wagers with at least one place in an Iowa sporting event. Deckers is accused of placing 366 underage wagers, 26 which were on Iowa State sporting events, including a 2021 football game against Oklahoma State when he was the backup. Bloom is accused of placing about 170 underage wagers, one of which was the under total points wager on Iowa's 2021 rivalry game against Iowa State. And then Ayoma has, which I mentioned, has already been suspended indefinitely by the NFL for betting on Broncos games during his rookie season, and has now been accused of betting on two Iowa State football games. So, guys, like I said earlier, I mean, we've covered gambling stuff for a while now, but what are your thoughts on the Iowa and Iowa State stuff and all these players?
Well, gambling should immediately become illegal in Iowa because this has gotten completely out of hand and out of control. This is crazy. This is what, the seventh or eighth week in a row that we're having to talk about it, gambling, whether that's in college or in the NFL or something going around sports, especially involving the sport that the gambler is playing and even the team that the gambler is playing for or playing against, which is just absolutely crazy. I don't even know what to think anymore. I don't know what to say that hasn't already been said by us in the past 8 weeks or so, but it's gotten so out of control that it's honestly becoming more of an issue legally than it is just suspending and punishing these athletes. Because, I mean, the type of numbers you were just mentioning there, Alex, like the starting quarterback for Iowa State is placing underage wagers, and 26 of them were on his games. That's insane. That's absurd. This needs to be handled legally instead of also including punishments for the athletes themselves and in their teams and their franchises. But goodness gracious, this is just getting so out of hand.
Yeah, up until this point, we sound like a broken record because we talk about this almost every week. It seems like we just get more and more information about how stupid these people can be. You talk about a starting quarterback betting on his own team's game. I mean, I don't even know where he gets the thought of doing that. Like, you're a starting quarterback at a very good university, and you want to throw that all away just to, you know, wager money? I really don't get it. And the fact that it's not just one person, it continues to be multiple groups of people from different universities. It's become a real problem, real issue. And like you said, Gray, it's going to take it's really more of a legal aspect now because these are underage wagers. It has gone way too far. The NCAA really needs to step in and handle this a lot better than what the universities are doing right now because it's been awful.
You talk about the NCAA and their rules regarding this. They can be suspended or face permanent loss of eligibility for betting on games, their own games, and on other sports at their own school. So if they're found guilty of what they're accused of and what I just mentioned earlier, then they will not play another game of college football or basketball, whatever sport they're playing. And there's a baseball player in there as well. So, I mean, to be this stupid and to – there's a – I think Hunter Deckers used, like, his mother's name to bet, and then Euless used, like, some other name that was tied to him. I mean – to be that idiotic and not think that, hey, when the NCAA does an investigation into this, they're going to tie a person with the same last name as me or the maiden name of my mother back to me for betting. It's just idiotic. Yeah. I don't know what these guys were thinking, especially with NIL now. You're getting money. Why are we betting the money? And I think, Gray, you mentioned it multiple times over the past couple of weeks about educating these players on how to how to spend their money, how to save their money, educating them on all that aspects, because they're getting influxes of money, millions and millions of dollars, thousands of dollars if you're a lower tier athlete. But I mean, they're getting this money and they're not really sure how to use it. It's like the really is their first time getting this type of money, and to not have the education to deal with it, it bothers me. I think high school should be investing in courses like that, education and money. Definitely colleges to require it. So I think in the future, you're going to see players, especially college players, athletes, be required to take an intro course with money in their first year of college, just so they understand what to do and what not to do with their money in the future. All right, moving on to the next story. New Orleans Saints running back Alvin Kamara has been suspended for the first three games of the NFL season for his role in the 2022 fight in Las Vegas. This comes after Kamara pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charge of breach of the peace. And the three games he will miss are the Tennessee Titans in week one, Carolina Panthers in week two, and Green Bay Packers in week three. Nathan, you're the Saints fan here. Do you agree with the suspension? And do you think it'll have any impact on the Saints this season?
Yeah, I agreed with it. I actually thought it was kind of light going off past instances, but given Alvin Kamara being such a big name player, I felt like him and his relationship with Roger Goodell probably played a part in how long he got suspended for. As far as the Saints moving forward, especially in the first three games of the season where Kamara will miss, Jamal Williams being the backup running back, I mean, that's he can honestly have a job as a starting running back in the NFL. So I'm not as worried as I probably would have been if Jamal Williams wasn't there. But I appreciate Alvin Kamara for finally stepping up and taking responsibility for what he did in the fight. And obviously, it makes the Saints organization look bad. There's been several things in the past that have been really dividing with the Saints. And for this to continue, it's really been sad to see. But I believe that Alvin Kamara is a better person that in moving forward, he won't be in any more legal trouble like that.
Yeah, I've got to agree. I agree with the suspension. I do see the point where he's a bigger name, but I think the biggest thing that got him just to the only three game suspension was just like you said, Nathan, him actually taking that responsibility and doing that. So I think that's the biggest thing. But then I look at the Saints and what kind of impact this could have. I know, you know, the week one, week two, and week three opponents for the Saints aren't like the Chiefs and the Eagles and, you know, the Chiefs again. So it's not going to be extremely tough, but this is also a Saints team that's got some holes in it and is coming in with a new quarterback in Derek Carr. So I could see it maybe drawing some issues, but just like you said, Nathan, just like Nathan said just then, they've got Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams could start on 50% at least of NFL teams as a running back. He's a very good player, a newly acquired from the Lions. I think he could be a stud, and yeah, I agree. He could, down the line, could end up being their starting running back in general, even with Kamara coming back in week four.
Yeah, I think Jamal Williams on the roster really saves them from the Kamara suspension. I think that's probably the main reason they ended up signing him this offseason, because they knew this was happening sooner rather than later, and it ended up doing so. And they also can't ignore TCU rookie Kendre Miller, who they drafted in the third round. I mean, dude was a stud at TCU last season, almost 1,400 yards on the ground and 17 touchdowns of his own, compared to Jamal Williams' 17 touchdowns. So this is going to be a two-headed monster going forward, and it might be a three-headed monster when Kamara comes back, because each of these guys bring a different aspect to their game. Kamara really being that go-to receiving threat out of the backfield, Jamal Williams being that power back, and then Kendre Miller bringing that burst of speed down the sideline and the explosiveness. But also coming out of Saints camp earlier this weekend was their running back, you know, Benjamin ruptured his Achilles, so he's out for the season. So basically you're down to Jamal Williams and Kendre Miller being your only really running back threats. And it was reported that Kareem Hunt's on a visit to the Saints as they're recording this video for this week, and he might sign with them. So do y'all think the Saints coming in and signing with guy Kareem Hunt would be a good idea, even with Kamara only missing 3 weeks and having guys like Jamal Williams and Kendre Miller on the roster?
I mean, it wouldn't be a terrible idea. I'm not like a huge Kareem Hunt fan, but he definitely offers a good bit of production. You saw what he did with the Browns, having to fight with Nick Chubb for carries. I mean, he still looked pretty solid as a running back. So it wouldn't be a terrible idea to pick him up.
Yeah, I agree. I think Kareem Hunt would provide the depth that you would need, especially for the first 3 weeks. Just like you mentioned, Alex, with, you know, Benjamin not going to be in there and Alvin Kamara suspended, you are really just down to Williams and Kendre Miller. And as good as those two backs can be, if something happens, you can get down to one, and that could be dangerous. So I think that's just a depth piece. And Kareem Hunt is a solid running back. I'm not a huge Kareem Hunt fan either, but he's a solid back that would come in there and provide the depth behind a guy like Jamal Williams.
Yeah, I mean, I like Kareem Hunt as a football player, as a person, not so much. We kind of know what happened with that and the off the field stuff, but. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would sign him, because Kendre Miller, I think, has the potential to be a starting running back in this league. And putting Kareem Hunt on the roster would probably take carries away from a guy like Kendre Miller. So for me, I would try to avoid Kareem Hunt and stick with guys like Jamal Williams and Kendre Miller, and try to pick up a lesser guy on the market that's probably not going to bring as much issues that somebody like Kareem Hunt would. Because as we've seen with Kareem Hunt, when he doesn't get what he wants, he's very vocal about it, and he's probably going to do some questionable things. So for me, if I was a Saints fan, if I was a Saints front office, I would avoid Kareem Hunt at all costs. All right, moving on to the third story. Los Angeles Lakers forward Anthony Davis agreed to a 3-year, $186 million maximum contract extension. This deal is the richest annual contract extension in NBA history, averaging about $62 million a season. Gray went over how Justin Herbert and Jaylen Brown got massive extensions last week, and Anthony Davis gets one this week. So do you like Davis getting this much money in a contract with his injury issues?
Yeah, that's the big and only problem I could see with that. First of all, the money that's just being thrown to these athletes is getting absurd. It's just it seems like every other week we break the record of if largest contract in NFL history or largest contract in NBA history, and the same thing is going like that in the MLB. It's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's crazy to think about, but you also look at about what kind of player a guy like Anthony Davis is and could be when he's healthy. He really is. LeBron's the best player and one of the best players of all time. But if you look at like most valuable player towards the Lakers, it's Anthony Davis, and he provides something that LeBron and really anybody else can provide for the Lakers, is that dominant big man in the middle that you've got to have nowadays. And when he is healthy, he's one of the better big men in our league. But yeah, just like you mentioned, Alex, his injury issues and how frequent he gets injured and the type of severity that some of his injuries have had in the past, that should worry me. As if you're a Lakers fan, that should worry you as someone who this is a lot of guaranteed money that you're throwing to Anthony Davis, hoping and praying that he is going to be healthy and be able to contribute on the court, which we all hope for that. But it's something we haven't seen consistently from Anthony Davis because of his injury issues.
Yeah, this might go down as the smartest contract extension in NBA history or the stupidest, just depending mm-hmm. on how much Anthony Davis plays. Looking at past seasons, how many times he's gone out of games with injuries, whether it be the smallest thing or a massive injury, it's all been there, and he's taken time away from the team in games throughout the season. So if I want to depend on a guy like Anthony Davis continue to play for me, I don't know if I would have given him this much money. But obviously, Anthony Davis being a big name athlete, and like you said, Gray, he might be the most valuable athlete on the Lakers roster at this point in time, given LeBron's age. So you kind of have to give him as much money as he wants for him to stay. I don't think you can see Anthony Davis as someone who is always after the money, because I'm sure he loves playing alongside LeBron and playing for that Lakers team, and he wants to get them back to that championship caliber that they were back in 2020 when they won the bubble championship. But up until this point, I don't know if I would have given him that much money on his extension, but hey, you got to keep him in LA.
Yeah, look at the extension. He's got 2 years left on his deal. Davis is 30 years old, so at the end of this contract, his final year, he'll be 35 years old. I don't know if I could willingly say I want to pay Anthony Davis $62 million as a 35-year-old when he can't stay healthy as a 28-year-old. I don't know if I can. I definitely would have waited a year, maybe till the end of his contract to sign an extension or something, because he's proven he cannot stay on the court. And I don't think
It's going to change when he's 35 years old, when his body is breaking down even more than it already is. And there's no LeBron on the roster because LeBron's probably got 1 or 2 years left max. So it'll be all Anthony Davis and probably all Austin Reeves for that matter. And yeah. I just don't see a way Anthony Davis is worth $60 million a season. But when Jaylen Brown goes and signs that massive contract extension last week, I guess the Lakers had to pay Anthony Davis, who's miles better than a guy like Jaylen Brown, this massive contract. So I guess at the end of the day, this is the way, like Gray said, of moving forward in sports, where these players get these massive contract extensions, if it is, regardless if they deserve them or not. But Anthony Davis is much more deserving than a guy like Jaylen Brown.
For sure.
All right, the last story we have today is, after this season, the Pac-12 will be down to 4 teams: Washington State, Stanford, Oregon State, and Cal. This comes as a result of Oregon and Washington finalizing a move to the Big Ten, and Arizona State, and Utah finalizing a move to join the Big 12 alongside Pac-12 counterpart Colorado, who made the jump last week. These moves will occur following the 2023-2024 season. Guys, do you think the Pac-12 has a future? No. Do you think they're going to combine with somebody like the Mountain West?
I think that's the only future.
There is a future. Well, it's done.
It is done. Pac-12 is done. Go ahead and switch the Power 5 to the Power 4 as of right now, because I think in a few years it'll be the Power 3. But goodness gracious, it was like 2 weeks ago, we were like, well, I still do think the Pac-12 is going to fall, but, you know, they still got Oregon, they still got Washington, they still got somebody like Utah, Colorado's still in there with Dion, and then they all leave. And Arizona State also leave. And now you're just left with Washington State, Stanford, Oregon State, and Cal. So, yeah, I think the best thing to do for the Pac-12 is to blow it up and to encourage those other four teams to find other spots, whether that be in the Mountain West, whether that be if the Big 12 is like, sure, everybody can come in. But I don't really know what to do, if to be honest, if I'm the Pac-12, because, you know, I feel like we definitely saw this coming, but we didn't see it coming like now, you know. But it's crazy.
Yeah, Pac-12, I want to say that they could add more teams and somehow say why, but at that point, I don't think they'd be considered a power conference anymore just because of the lesser teams they had. Like you said, Gray, they should just blow it up. All the four teams left need to figure something out, because obviously they're like the last few people picked for a dodgeball game. They're the people nobody want. And that's kind of unfortunate, because some of these universities have a lot of history, and they do bring in some big recruits, just like Stanford does. Cal has some people too. And I don't even know what to say for the future of college football anymore, because every single day it seems like teams are just jumping ship and hopping to new conferences, and it doesn't even matter where you are regional wise, because the Big Ten can include someone halfway across the world and no one will bat an eye to it. So that's just where we all are in college football. A lot of new faces and a lot of different conferences. It's going to make for a very, very interesting 2024 season. And I'm really not sure how it's going to go. The real question is, how much longer does the ACC have? Because I know they have all those teams in that conference just watching what the Pac-12 has been doing. And it's just a matter of time before those teams want to try to jump ship too.
Yeah, I think the bozo of the decade, or sorry, century, probably goes to the Pac-12, because you look in 2011, they decided to not admit teams like Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech, because they didn't want to deal with Longhorn Network. They didn't want to budge on equal revenue sharing. So they basically told Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Texas to suck it and go back to the Big 12. And look, now the Big 12 basically took, what, four of your teams? I mean, the Pac-12 really could have been what the Big 12 is now. They could have been they could have been that, and the Big 12 could have been what the Pac-12 is now. But unfortunately, the Pac-12 decided to be a bunch of bozos and not do that. Y'all kind of alluded to, but what do you think this means for the future of college football? Because in 2024, you got the new playoff system coming in, where the six highest conference winners are in and the six highest ranked next teams are in.
Yeah.
What do you think it means?
I think they're going to have to relook at it, especially because, just like you said, Alex, they originally had it for the sixth or the six highest conference winners. And so obviously the Power Five, and then one Group of Five conference winner, the highest ranked one, of course. Well, now what are the power? What does Power Five mean? Like, that's the SEC, obviously, Big Ten, Big 12, currently the ACC. But again, just like Nathan alluded to, don't know how much longer that's going to last with Clemson and Florida State, probably eyeing the SEC, and then the part of Miami eyeing the Big Ten. Like, what? So, and then the Pac 12, which has four teams that won't even sniff the college football playoff. So, it's interesting because now you're going to have to look at either, you know, completely redesigning that playoff, you know, structure or whatever, or you're going to have to admit two Group of Five champions, which that could be problematic, very problematic for those conference teams, because they're going to end up playing the Georgias, the Ohio States, the Alabamas, the Michigans. And that's just, I'm sorry, but as much as I want the college football playoff to reinvent itself and it move forward to the future, that's not a good idea at all. So I think watching what the ACC does and seeing what the Pac-12 does do, if they decide to blow it up, just like we were mentioned, is going to, we're going to have to look at what the playoff and the playoff committee think the future of the playoff is going to be like.
Yeah, for reinventing the playoff now with all the conference shifts, it's not going to be an easy thing. There's no immediate right answer. You talked about including two Group of Five champions. That's just not going to work. That's that will end up in awful games. I think back to when Alabama played Cincinnati and just it wasn't close the whole time. So if we have a repeat of that, there's not going to be competitive games between. It's almost like you're just putting them in for pity. It's awful. It doesn't show respect to the Group of Five teams that are making it, in my opinion. I think it's pretty sad. It's like a cupcake game for some of these actual Power Five teams, or I guess you can't even call it the Power Five anymore. Wow, this is really weird. Going forward, this is all going to look out of whack. It's not going to resemble anything we remember about college football. And now you're going to start wondering, where did it all go wrong? I don't even know where to pick that out at.
Yeah, for me, the big question is, would you rather see an 11-1 Tulane conference winner or a 10-3 Alabama? Who would you rather watch in a college football playoff game?
Especially against like a 12-0 Georgia.
Yeah,
or a 11-1 Ohio State, or a 10-2 Ohio State. Like, yeah, would you rather watch Tulane or Cincinnati or UCF or somebody like that go to them and get absolutely demolished, or would you rather watch an Alabama or a Tennessee or an Oregon go there and at least put up a competent matchup?
Yeah, I think the big issue is, Nathan kind of said it, is it's not fair to those Group of Five teams that go 11-1, go perfect like UCF did, because if they win their conference, they deserve to be in there. But it's just the fact they don't have the talent that teams like Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan have. They just don't. And while there might be a competitive game, maybe once every year, it's not going to be consistent. You're going to get teams that are going to get blown out like Cincinnati did couple years ago, Nathan mentioned. It's not going to be watchable games, good games. You might have a TCU-Georgia game where it's, 65-7. So, I think you should admit teams into the college football playoff that win their conference, like Tulane, when they went 11-1, and you got UCF when they went 12-0, but they're now in the Big 12, so it really doesn't matter. But you got to admit those teams because they deserve to be there. It's just not going to be competitive games, and that's going to be difficult. But I definitely think they probably got to move to probably five conference championships admitted, where you have the Power Four, which is basically what it's going to be. And if it's the Power Three at the end of the year, then you have to just move it down to four conference championship winners, and then maybe six at large bids or something like that, and have a 10. I don't know. It's the whole issue. There's not a right answer, like Nathan said, but I don't doubt that the NCAA will figure something out at the end of the day, because they did when the Pac-12 was still there. And before I move on to the next thing, I just like to point out Eli Drinkwitz, even though he's kind of a meme, he did make an intelligent quote or comment about all this expansion and the realignment and all that. He said, did we count the cost? And I'm talking about the financial cost. I'm talking about, did we count the cost for the student athletes involved in this decision? What does it cost us, those student athletes? We're talking about a football decision. They base it on football. What about the softball and baseball, who have to travel across country? Do we ask about the cost of them? Do we know about the number one indicator or symptom of or of the cause of mental health issues is? It's lack of rest and sleep. Traveling in those baseball, softball games, those people, they travel commercial. They get done playing and they got to go to the airport. They come back, it's 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning, and they got to go to class. I mean, did we ask any of them? So, guys, I'll drink with his comments. Did the conferences really consider these other sports when they did this? Because, yeah, USC, they're going to have to play Penn State, and Penn State's cross-country. I mean, these athletes, like Drinkwitz mentioned, they're not going to have zero sleep and have to go to class the next day. And I don't know, personally, if I have 8 a.m. the next day, not saying these athletes will have 8 a.m., but if they do, they come around, they're not going to bed till 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, turning around and getting up at like 8 o'clock to go to a class. I mean, they're not getting any sleep. Plus, going to practice, getting homework done, writing papers. I mean, these athletes are going to be drained. They already are playing in the Pac-12 when they're barely traveling. Now they're traveling cross country. So what do y'all think about these players not being considered in this?
Yeah, I think not even just obviously football and basketball and the softballs and baseballs and soccers, that sort of thing. But you also got to think about the track and the cross countries and the volleyballs and those sort of things. All of those sports are going to be impacted by that, men and women sports. And we think of the term student athlete. What comes first? What did I say first? I said student first. And that this is going to hurt the student aspect to these student athletes, but that's just not the direction that the money is. So that's not where the NCAA and these conferences are going to go, because for them, it's all about the money. It's not about the well-being of their student athletes. It's not. And it's so sad to think about that, because, yeah, just like you said, Alex, the UCLA girls volleyball team is going to have to travel across country to go play Rutgers and then Penn State, and then have to come all the way back for a home game the next day against Ohio State, who's going to have to travel cross country. That's absurd. There was a reason these conferences were geographically designed. There's a reason the SEC is the Southeastern Conference. So, and that is a problem. And I love Drinkwitz's quote on this, because he's looking at it from the student athlete's perspective and how hard this change is going to be on, you know, physical and mental health of these student athletes, who, again, it's about the student first. The student always comes first. School always comes first. And to the NCAA and the conferences and all this realignment stuff, it just seems like the money and the athlete part comes first, which is sad.
Conferences were made to be regional for a reason. And unfortunately, we've gotten to this point where money has overtaken the fact that student athletes are still students and are still attending class. And all of that does not matter to the people running these conferences, because at the end of the day, it's all about making money. It's all about improving your business as a conference. So when you look at the Big Ten and what they've done in incorporating USC and UCLA, they didn't think about any of the students before that. All they thought about was how much money that they were going to get from this deal. And that's the way it's going to be moving forward. That's the way it's going to continue to be. And that's just how society is. It's driven by money. And it's a terrible thing. But at the end of the day, I think that we could have expected this, given the fact that, I mean, Greg, you just mentioned, I mean, all these big NBA players and NFL players getting these huge contracts. The more money people have, I mean, they're only going to want more at the end of the day. So it's going to continue going in this direction. And you ask yourself, where's the stopping point going to be at? There is no stopping point, because naturally people are greedy and envious of what other people have. And it's all gone so downhill. There's no way to instantly fix it all. And it's probably only going to get worse.
Yeah, it just bothers me, man, because I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it's like less than 1% of college athletes go pro. And I don't want to hear the fact, well, you know, all these college football players are going to the NFL and they're making all this type of money. We see these contracts. Well, that's not all the players on that roster. That's maybe one or two. If you're Alabama, Georgia, maybe more than that. But majority of college football teams, maybe one or two players are lucky to make an NFL roster and stay there for more than 3 years after the rookie deal. So these guys, they're going to not make the NFL, and they're going to have no college degree, or they're going to, I mean, they got to consider these college athletes because they need to be making the grades. They need to be getting their degree and understanding what they're learning. But as of right now, it just feels like NCAA and these conferences and the colleges themselves all seem to care about is money. And I know money is great and all, but when your students aren't learning, that's what college is all about, is learning and getting your degree and going out into the workforce and making money for your family. And I know these college athletes, they're going to the NFL and all that, but like I said, less than 1% are going to the NFL, the NBA, the MLB and all that. They're not making all this type. They're not making millions and millions of dollars. I mean, minor league baseball players make like $30,000 a year, and that's not even, I don't think it's that much. So these colleges really have to rethink and realign with these students, and not the athletes, these students. Like you said, Gray, student comes first, and it always should. And as of right now, it's not, which is sad. All right, let's move on to the next thing we're going to talk about today. ESPN dropped their top 10 position U rankings for every position this past week. And they were pretty bad, in my opinion. I think y'all probably agree with me. Mm-hmm. But just to remind you on how they calculate these things is look at key markers for greatness in each position. They award points for college production by way of all conference and all-American honors, the NFL draft selections and NFL production, and they only count the NFL production through the player's first 5 years. So Michigan can't claim Tom Brady's, 20 years of greatness. So that's how they calculate these things. So keep that in mind as we go through them. But let's start with the quarterback U rankings. And number one, they decided to go with the Oklahoma Sooners. And you look at who they had the past couple, or I guess the decade or since 2000, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Sam Bradford, Jalen Hurts. I put air quotes around that. They kind of want to claim him, but he really didn't. Only played 1 year there. Look at Landry Jones, Josh Heupel, had Caleb Williams there till Lincoln Riley took him to USC. So, and then after Oklahoma, you have USC, who had Caleb Williams, Matt Leinart, Mark Sanchez, Carson Palmer, Matt Barkley, Sam Darnold, and Cody Kessler. And then for some reason, Oregon is at number three, above a team like Alabama, who's number four. And Oregon, Marcus Mariota, Justin Herbert. I know they have a couple other guys in there, like Joey Harrington, Kellen Clemens, and A.J. Feely, Dennis Dixon, but those guys weren't comparable to Alabama. If you look at their quarterbacks, A.J. McCarron, Tua Tagovailoa, Mac Jones, Bryce Young, and Jalen Hurts. Tua, Mac Jones, and Bryce Young, and Jalen Hurts are all starters right now in the NFL. I think that's the most starters of any college team right now. So do you all agree with the quarterback rankings at all?
Oregon, I mean, I don't know what Marcus Mariota did at Oregon to deserve him to throw him. I know he won a Heisman and was all he was a really good quarterback, but he himself just completely throws Oregon into this top three, which is crazy to consider Oregon among teams like Oklahoma, USC, and Alabama, because just like you said, talking about Alabama, I know that before. They were really, really good quarterbacks. They're like Greg McElroy and A.J. McCarron. So they're national championship-winning quarterbacks. So very, very good. But recently, he got four NFL starters. Tua, starter for the Dolphins. Mac, starter for the Patriots. Bryce Young, starter for the Panthers. And Jalen Hurts, starter for the Eagles. I know Jalen Hurts transferred to Oklahoma, and you got to consider that with Oklahoma. But you also got to consider that for Alabama. But Oregon being up there above a team like Alabama is absurd to me, because outside of Marcus Mariota, it's just Justin Herbert. And Justin Herbert, I don't think he's a horrible quarterback, but what did he do at Oregon? Nothing. He won a Rose Bowl. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, that's good for Oregon's standards. That's absurd. I like USC being up there, though. I think Oklahoma, USC, and Alabama, there's not a wrong answer between those three, but Oregon being up there is flat out stupid.
Yeah, that when I had a chance to look at this list, I thought that was absolutely mind boggling that Oregon was considered to be a top three in the quarterback U rankings. I looked at what Alabama had and what they have currently produced in the NFL, and that there's four NFL starters at quarterback at this point in time, which, like you said, Alex, I believe that is the most out of any college team. And I don't even think it's close, to be honest. And then I looked at the number one slot. You could put Oklahoma there. I personally would have had USC. I think USC edges it out a little bit for me. But, yeah, you could go between USC, Oklahoma, and Alabama. I don't think there's a wrong answer there. All three universities have produced great quarterback talents. I probably have a little bit of recency bias just watching what Alabama's produced in the NFL. But you can't forget about what USC produced in the early 2000s either.
And then you look at Ohio State. They're considerably better than Oregon. I mean, you talk about CJ Stroud, who's in there now. Cordell Jones, he won a national championship. He beat Oregon. He beat Marcus Mariota in Oregon. Justin Fields, Dwayne Haskins, Braxton Miller. I don't know what they gave Justin Herbert. I don't know if he won 2-3 national championships at Oregon. I didn't know that happened, but I guess it did because I must be seeing it wrong because that's crazy.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think I can go wrong with USC, Oklahoma, or Alabama, but it's got to be those three in the top three and nobody else even close.
Yes.
All right, moving on to running back you. I really think this is probably a two-team race between the number one ranked team by ESPN, Alabama, and the number two, Wisconsin. Alabama, I mean, we can sit here for about 3 hours and go through each running back they had. Yeah, Heisman winner Mark Ingram, Heisman winner Derrick Henry, Trent Richardson, Eddie Lacy, T.J. Yeldon, Kenyon Drake, Josh Jacobs, Brian Robinson, Damian Harris, Najee Harris, and Bo Scarborough. Wisconsin, Monty Ball, James White, Melvin Gordon, Jonathan Taylor, and Corey Clement. And you got LSU at third with Jeremy Hill, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Leonard Fournette, Darius Geis, Stephen Ridley, Spencer Ware, Alfred Blue, and Joseph Addai. And then at four, you had Lamar Miller. I mean, you had Miami with Lamar Miller, Frank Gore, Willis McGahee, Clinton Portis, and Duke Johnson. Do you think ESPN got this right, ranking that top three, top four?
Well, I think there's a massive drop off between one and two and everybody else. you talk about Alabama's list. They're by far running back you, and any team that has an argument, I will continue to name other running backs that they didn't have that I understand there are better running backs, especially in college, than some of the Alabama running backs. But then you looked at their entire, especially since Nick Saban's been there, but also in their entire program's history. Yeah. I mean, goodness gracious.
Alexander.
Alabama's easy number one. And then Wisconsin, it's just like, it seems like they've always got a good running back. Always. They've always got a good running back. Just because they're Wisconsin. That's just what they do. And some of the college production that their running backs have put up has been unbelievable. So I agree with that top two. I don't think LSU belongs anywhere on here. But outside of that, I like it. Leonard Fournette is the only reason LSU's on here.
Yeah, I like the majority of the list, but there is one college that is ranked too low on this list, in my opinion, and that is Georgia at number seven, producing guys like Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, James Cook, DeAndre Swift, Todd Gurley. I mean, that's just a great list of running backs right there. In my opinion, they should be third over a team like LSU. No doubt, I mean, they produced some great running backs. They continue to produce great running backs, and I don't think they got respected on this list.
Yeah, for me, I look at Oklahoma. I don't think they were respected at all because you talk about DeMarco Murray. He only had that really one good year in the NFL, but he's pretty dominant in Oklahoma. And you talk about Adrian Peterson. And that's probably one of the best running backs of all time right there. And you got Ramondre Stevenson, who's killing it at the Patriots. Samaje P, Ryan and Joe Mixon, both those guys were killing it at the Bengals. So I think Oklahoma was ranked a little bit too low. I think they probably had a better running back core than someone like LSU. Because like y'all mentioned, LSU was really carried by a guy like Leonard Fournette, who was proven to be a fraud by Alabama's defense. So I think you look at Oklahoma and Georgia, they'd probably be in the top, maybe top five, definitely to put them in top five, probably three and four, because Wisconsin, I think maybe Georgia and Oklahoma might have a conversation above a team like Wisconsin, because since Jonathan Taylor, I think Braylon Allen's good, but I don't think he's up there with some of the guys Oklahoma and Georgia have produced. All right, let's move on to the wide receiver U. Another very questionable ranking, in my opinion. Number one being USC, two, Ohio State, three, LSU, and then all the way down at number four, Alabama. Guys, I think we know you're going to go with this. Alabama ranked at four is blasphemous, especially below a team like LSU. I know LSU has had Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, but look at Alabama. I mean, the breadth of talent they've had there since Nick Saban's been there is much more than LSU's ever had. And USC, for that matter. I don't know if USC's ranked number one. I think Ohio State, LSU, and Alabama could all be ranked above USC. I don't think USC's top three.
I don't think USC is either. To be honest, I would go Alabama 1, Ohio State 2, then LSU, then USC. Because, again, just like you mentioned, Alex, I'm not going to repeat what you said, but the type of talent that Alabama has been able to produce at wide receiver is absolutely absurd, especially since Nick Saban's been there. And then I look at Ohio State, and a lot of younger talent, I'll say. I think a lot of this Ohio State talent has come fairly recently, and that is the case for most of these teams, especially some of the lists that we're looking at here. But then I look at LSU, and I'm just looking at the list for LSU, and LSU is a much better list than USC, because not just like you said, Alex, you got Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase and Terrace Marshall, the guys that were there that amazing season in the 2019 year. But you also got Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham that were there. And then you got guys like DJ Chark, who had a pretty good season. Brandon LaFell was there, who had great success in the NFL. You compare that to USC, who's got Michael Pittman and Amon Ross St. Brown, and even Juju Smith-Schuster, who could be good wide receivers this year. But Drake London, Jordan Addison, Jordan Addison, I probably would consider more on the Pittsburgh list because that's where he was very successful. I don't think USC should be above. It should be anywhere close to Ohio State or Alabama, but I don't think they should be above LSU either.
Yeah, for me, I probably would have put Alabama first. Not much to say, not much of an argument not to put them number one. Just the amount of talent they put in the NFL at the wide receiver position has been insane. I think a close second would be LSU for me. Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. You can keep going. There's a bunch of great wide receivers LSU has produced. And then most recently, Ohio State has a lot of young wide receiver talent in the NFL. You talk about Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. Both boys have really good years, as well as Terry McLaurin. So I don't think that you can go wrong with that. And then USC going at 4. And I was really surprised to see USC at the number one slot, given that all their talent that they produced doesn't even come close to measuring up to teams like Alabama and LSU.
Yeah, Alabama has the only Heisman wide receiver since what, Desmond Howard?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the fact that number 4, I don't understand that. And then also at Clemson, not being in the top 10 on this list. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, Mike Williams, Hunter Renfrow, T. Higgins. And let's even talk about some of the other guys that have had success at Clemson. I mean, Justin Ross is going to be one of those guys, hopefully, at the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're not even in the top 10, I don't understand that. Because Notre Dame and Pittsburgh and Florida, I just don't see the wide receivers there. Oklahoma State, I know they had some good guys here and there, but Clemson has had steady good wide receivers there for a long, long time, even before Dabo Sweeney.
Florida must be carried by Percy Harvin, because Kadarius Toney, I guess. That's absolutely absurd to have them over Clemson. Clemson should be at least sixth on this list, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, that bothers me a little bit. But let's move on to tight end view. Number one, Miami. This is really a four-man race, in my opinion. You got Miami 1, Notre Dame 2, Iowa 3, and Stanford 4. Guys, do y'all agree with that ranking, considering what's been happening at those schools tight end-wise?
I think Iowa should be first, to be honest with you.
I don't know.
Iowa's always had unbelievable talent come out of tight end. You want to be a good tight end, especially in the pros, you go to Iowa. You got George Kittle, TJ Hockenson, Noah Fant, even guys like Dallas Clark went there. So you have the success at Iowa and the success in the pros. I would go there. And then you look at Miami, I think they're right up there with them, because you have guys who had unbelievable success in the NFL too, like Greg Olsen, Caleb Winslow, Jimmy Graham, Jeremy Shockey, and all those guys. So that's tough. I think Iowa and Miami are by far and ahead over Stanford and Notre Dame, but any of those, again, not a wrong answer, to be honest.
Yeah, I would have went Iowa number one. their talent. I mean, that's all people go to Iowa for, is to become a tight end and go to the
NFL. Gamble.
And, well, that too, but that's recent. That's new stuff right there. Yeah. There's not much going on in Iowa besides that. I guess there's corn, but looking at the number two slot, I probably would have went Miami. A lot of their talent is early 2000s talent. They haven't really had much recent success producing tight ends because they haven't been back in a while. They haven't been very good. And then it's between Notre Dame and Stanford for the third slot. At this point in time, I probably would go Notre Dame, especially most recently producing Michael Mayer. But I don't think there's a wrong answer if you want to put Stanford in there at three as well. But I think Iowa definitely has to be number one on that list.
Yeah, I think it's between Miami and Iowa. Y'all talked about it. Miami definitely has the better earlier players like Kellen Winslow II, Jeremy Shockey, Jimmy Graham. But Iowa has the better later players, more recent type of guys like George Kittle and TJ Hawkinson. But I personally have Miami over that because Jimmy Graham, Jeremy Shockey, Greg Olsen. I mean, those guys were some of the best tight ends of the 2000s. So I think I'd have them above Iowa. But I think the way Iowa's trending, the way Miami's trending, Iowa will definitely surpass Miami in a couple of years, or probably next 5 years, if that. Or moving on to the offensive line, I mean, I don't think we have much to talk about here. Number one's Alabama, two Iowa, Ohio State. I think that's the big drop off between Alabama and Ohio State. There's no doubt Alabama O-line you. Any arguments there?
No. I think my only argument would be they have Wisconsin third and Oklahoma fourth. I would switch those because you got guys like Trey Williams and Orlando Brown and Lane Johnson and Darrell Williams all went to Oklahoma. And then Wisconsin, I know Travis Frederick is one of the better of all time at the center spot, but Joe Thomas, and that's about it. So I probably would switch Wisconsin and Oklahoma, but no arguments at one and two with Alabama and Ohio State.
Yeah, Alabama, as I've said, the entire time we've been going over these lists, it's consistent talent being put at these positions. Going through some of Alabama's top players at the O-line position, Evan Neal, Evan Mathis, Jarek Willis, DJ Fluker, Cam Robinson, Ryan Kelly, Andre Smith, Chance Warmack, Lane Dickerson, Bradley Bozeman. I mean, those are very, very solid offensive linemen in the NFL. And then looking at Ohio State and what they produce, they're right up there, Corey Lindsey, Taylor Decker. But the one thing that needs to be switched definitely is Oklahoma being number three with Trent Williams and Lane Johnson and Orlando Brown. They produce far better offensive linemen than Wisconsin, in my opinion. And then honestly, Notre Dame could have, Notre Dame contest with Wisconsin for that fourth spot, given that they've produced Zach Martin and Quentin Nelson, two really, really great NFL talents.
I mean, Notre Dame, those guys Nathan has mentioned are probably the two best guards in the NFL right now, Zach Martin and Quentin Nelson. And I know Wisconsin has Joe Thomas, who's arguably one of the best tackles of all time. And Travis Frederick, like Greg mentioned, is probably one of the best centers of the past decade. But I think Notre Dame could definitely have an argument to be inside the top four or three. Or moving on to defensive line, I think this is another clean sweep here for Alabama being one. Then number two is Florida State, and number three is Ohio State. I spent a couple hours looking at Florida State's defensive linemen over the past decade, and I couldn't find anybody that I really was like, yeah, I know that guy. He was impactful. And maybe that's just because I wasn't a big Florida State fan at all, but I think Ohio State is far and ahead better than a team like Florida State at defensive linemen.
Yeah, no arguments at Alabama number one. I think that's easy to have them there. But then you have Florida State at two above Ohio State and Clemson. No. The only guy I can think of for Florida State, outside of a guy like Jared Verse, who's playing there this year, is Brian Burns, who plays for the Panther. He's a good, but he was more of a linebacker, hybrid, edge type of guy. So I just that defensive line, I don't really know if I can go there with Florida State over teams like Ohio State and Clemson, who have put in extreme talent. If this is specifically defensive end, I think Ohio State's probably number one. But if you look at the whole defensive line, you talk about the defensive tackles coming out of Alabama, that's just easy. So no arguments there. But defensive line, you talk about Ohio State, the Bosa twins, Cam Hayward, Chase Young. That's easy. And then Clemson should be ahead of Florida State.
Yeah, Alabama being number one, that's an automatic yes. But then you get down to Florida State at two over Ohio State, who has produced Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Chase Young, Cam Hayward. I mean, I think that's a pretty obvious number two right there for Ohio State. I don't even know why Florida State was considered over them. And then Clemson arguably has a better resume for defensive line you than Florida State does. So that was really questionable for me.
Yeah. Let's move on to some linebackers here. Linebacker you, number one, Georgia to Alabama. What, like earlier, I mean, this is like a, these are the top two and then a massive drop off to Ohio State at three. I think Georgia and Alabama could be flipped either way. I think recently Georgia has been much better at producing them, like within the past since Kirby Smart bit has got there. But Alabama, I mean, it's been consistent under Nick Saban. So I think consistency, you look at Alabama, but recency, it's Georgia. What do y'all think? Who would you go at first?
I think I've got to switch them. I've got to say Alabama's number one. And just going down the line and looking at some of the talent that you consider as an Alabama linebacker, and it's more than – I would agree. I think right now it's probably Georgia, given the past 2 years and what they've been able to put in the league and the type of blue-chip ratio prospects that they've been able to get at the linebacker spot and move on to the league. And the type of production that they've had. But it's, again, consistency, that's what we've been going off of this whole time. We've been ranking these universities. I've got to stay with Alabama. C.J. Mosley, Dante Hightower, Courtney Upshaw, Rashawn Evans, the stupid Reuben Foster, Reggie Ragland, Sean Dion Hamilton, Mac Wilson, even guys like Will Anderson, who's about to tear it up in the NFL this year for the Texans. So, but yeah, after Alabama, Georgia, I know Ohio State's three and Penn State's four. Like, that is such a huge drop.
For me, Alabama definitely should have been one. Given recency, Georgia has produced better linebackers than Alabama has. But looking at the past two decades as a whole, Alabama producing guys like C.J. Mosley and Dante Hightower, Rolando McClain, Courtney Upshaw, Rashawn Evans, Reuben Foster, Reggie Wagon. You can keep going down the list. There are so many great options at the linebacker position that Alabama has produced. They've been I can't even speak highly on some of these guys enough because there's just too many guys to speak of. So for right now, I think Alabama has to consistently be number one at linebacker U, but Georgia's getting up there. And then after that, I mean, you can just throw around the list. It would be fine.
All right. Going into our last university here, defensive back university, because we're not going to go over kicker or punter because as much as those positions somewhat matter, it's not worth talking about. We're just going to finish with defensive backs here. Number one being LSU, two Alabama, and then three Ohio State. I think that's probably going to be your top three there. No argument, no discussion. But LSU being number one over Alabama. Nathan, I know you hate LSU. So what are your thoughts on them being ranked above Alabama for defensive backs?
Man, LSU has produced a lot of great defensive back prospects over the past few years, and they continue to do so. But Alabama has done it at such a larger volume, and it's gotten to the point where Alabama definitely has to be number one on this list. I mean, I think you look at recency, Patrick Surtain. I mean, he has an argument that he could be the best corner in the league here in that season or two. Javier Arenas, Drake Kirkpatrick, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Mark Barron, Eddie Jackson, Kareem Jackson, Marlon Humphrey, Anthony Averett, Levi Wallace, Trayvon Diggs. I mean, these are so many guys that makes huge impacts on defenses of some of these NFL teams. And I look at some of the guys for LSU. I mean, you got Tre'Davious White, Jamal Adams, Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson. But after that, I mean, it gets kind of thin in the talent department for LSU. I mean, Derek Stingley Jr. is up there, but I mean, he's Devontae Smith's son. So I don't know how you could consider him up there. So I think Alabama has to be number one over LSU. But I think the top three are definitely right.
Yeah, I think the top three are easy: LSU, Alabama, and Ohio State. I could see switching Alabama and LSU at any point because of the type of top-end talent that they each have. I probably would personally have Alabama above just for the reason that Nathan mentioned, because of the more volume of talent that they put in. But I think if you're looking at top-end, I think the only guy that should be considered, or the only two guys that could be considered to compete with some of the top end guys for LSU. I mean, Pat Surtain is going to be up there, but we really don't, we haven't seen that. He could be there. He could be the best corner of everybody on this list by the end of the season, but Minkah Fitzpatrick and Eddie Jackson need to be up there. But then you got LSU's top end guys like Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu and Tre'Davious White and Jamal Adams and Eric Reed, who have all been top of the NFL before. And then guys like Jalen Mills and Dante Jackson and Devontae Smith's son, Derek Stingley. So I could see it going either way. I really can. And then you got Ohio State's perspective. I don't think they're above LSU or Alabama, but they've put in unbelievable talent as well, especially recently. You got Jeff Okuda's in there, Bradley Roby, Eli Apple, even though he sucks, Marshawn Lattimore, Malik Hooker, Denzel Ward, Sean Wade, all those
guys. No, don't throw Sean Wade in there. Do not throw Sean Wade in there.
But then you also look at the safety. Malcolm Jenkins is in there as well. So any of these three teams have arguments to be up there, but I think for volume and consistency, I've got to agree with Nathan and keep Alabama as DBU.
I think the only reason LSU is above Alabama is because of LSU's top end talent they had. Probably, I think they believe they won more awards and more All-Americans. He took Patrick Peterson. He was the most dominant corner there for a while at LSU. Tyrann Mathieu, before he got kicked out of LSU, was very, very talented. And then you look at guys like Ryan Clark. He's very good there. Le'Ron Landry, Eric Reed. Corey Webster was very underrated for his time there. And Derek Stingley, I mean, like Nathan said, he's Devonta Smith's son. And this is going off DBU for that reason. Alabama fans know what DBU stands for LSU. I'm not going to repeat it on here because they're going to get in trouble. But if you want to give LSU that DBU title for number one, definitely do that. But I think Alabama, if I was giving the DBU to somebody, it would be them, because they've produced much more volume-wise, like y'all both mentioned, over time than someone like LSU, who's, I think, is very top-heavy with guys like Peterson and Mathieu and Webster and Stingley. But I think Alabama definitely should be over LSU for me. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.